You're listening to episode 19 of the National Centre for Writing podcast. Every week we talk about the writing life and discover exciting new projects. I'm Simon Jones. It's Wednesday, 31st of October 2018, which means the National Novel Writing Month, aka NaNoWriMo, begins tomorrow. If you've not heard of it, this is the annual challenge to write 50,000 words in November. Over 400,000 people around the world took part in 2017. I've done it twice, and it's an amazing way to kickstart a new project and break through creative blocks. You can find out more at nanowrimo.org. It's also a wonderful way to meet other writers, both online and locally. One such writer is Elizabeth Haynes, who you will probably know as the best-selling author of crime novels, such as Into the Darkest Corner and The Murder of Harriet Monckton. What you might not realise is that Elizabeth got started by taking part in NaNoWriMo, and has written the first drafts of several of her novels during the November frenzy. With NaNoWriMo 2018 upon us, we couldn't resist getting Elizabeth into Dragon Hall to talk to us about how NaNoWriMo helped her become a published author. Right, Elizabeth, thank you for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
So, we're going to be talking about NaNoWriMo.
Yes.
Which is an annual event that takes place in November where people get together and try to write a substantial amount of words in 1 month.
50,000 words, yes,
yes,
is the aim.
This has been going for years and years, and it's had a particular role to play in kind of your author journey.
It has, yes.
I suppose. Some people still don't know it exists.
I know.
Which is kind of what I'm hoping to do with this podcast, is make sure that everyone knows it's a thing.
Yes, that would be excellent. So yep. To try and find a few more people. There must be many, many more novelists out there who are waiting for this opportunity. So it's great to be able to talk about it, yes.
Yeah, because it seems to be quite a kind of kickstarter for a lot of writers who maybe have never quite got around to writing before. And it gives them a way to really focus in.
Yeah, I've always thought about it. I think when I first discovered NaNoWriMo back in 2005, someone introduced me to it in October. It felt like a massive opportunity because I think, you know, we're all very busy people. We've all got lives and jobs and families and responsibilities. And writing kind of feels like a very self-indulgent hobby to have sometimes. And I think almost you need an excuse or a reason to prioritise it. And NaNoWriMo does that. It gives you an excuse to prioritise writing because it's only for 30 days and everybody can potentially commit to 30 days of spending a little bit of their time writing every day, and marvellous things can result from it.
Yeah, I think particularly if you're trying to write a novel, or you've got, you know, an aspiration of writing a novel, it can seem like this massive thing, it's going to take you years, and that can be a good excuse for never quite getting around to it. Whereas, yeah, NaNoWriMo kind of compacts it down, doesn't it?
It compacts it, but also I think it's very liberating because it's fun. And I think writing should primarily be fun, otherwise why should we bother doing it? And I think if you think of writing a novel and you do think potentially it could be several years commitment, which, let's face it, in a lot of cases it will be, it's very daunting and that puts you off before you start. And I think also once you get started, quite often you can hit writer's block and you wonder, oh, well, why am I bothering with this? It's nobody's going to read it. And NaNoWriMo, because it's only 30 days, gives you a reason to get over that. So there's no point stopping. You just carry on just for those 30 days. And it gets you over a lot of the daunting prospects of being a writer and writing a novel just because you've just got to keep going.
Yes, exactly. And the focus isn't so much on, you know, writing the best words that have ever been written. It's very much like just get the words down so that at the end of the month you have something.
Yes. It's like giving yourself permission to write a bad novel because the only way you're going to get a good novel is to write a bad novel and edit it. So it's not about quality, it's not about perfection. There are other months available for editing in. This is the month in which you're going to write your novel, when you're going to get all the words down, and they don't have to be good ones, they just have to be written.
Mm-hmm. So 2005 is when you did your first NaNoWriMo.
Yes.
And in terms of writing, like prior to that, what were you doing in terms of your writing life?
Oh, I don't know if everybody else does this, but I've been writing years and years, and I've written little extracts of things and little snippets of conversation and jotted down ideas for my novels. and I've got so far with them and then I've just stopped because it got too hard, or I got stuck on a plot point, or what was the point of continuing, or something real life got in the way. So for me, I've never had an excuse to finish anything or to carry on. And that was what the gift of NaNoWriMo was for me, really, was just the getting over those hurdles and carrying on, even if it was just for a month. And it's tremendously exhilarating as well. You know, it feels like a proper marathon effort, but with something really productive happening at the same time.
Mm-hmm. What was your approach with that first one? Did you have a big plan for what you're going to write, or did you make it up as you went along?
The first one, oh my goodness, no. Because I was only introduced to the whole concept of it just a couple of weeks before. I had an idea which was kind of a romance divorce story, and I got about 20 pages into that and thought, this isn't working, and immediately switched it to a serial killer thriller instead, sort of mid-sentence really. and NaNoWriMo is brilliant for that, because you can just switch tracks if it's not working, and ended up writing a whole serial killer thriller populated entirely by people I knew, because, you know, there was no point changing anything. it was a bit disastrous and has never seen the light of day, but I did it. I finished it, 50,000 words, and enjoyed myself while doing it as well.
Yes, exactly. And I think that's the key, because NaNoWriMo, you know, in itself can seem a bit daunting. You know, 50,000 words, if you've never written them before, can sound like a lot, but you can sort of make up your own rules a little bit. Like, there's no pressure to do it in a particular way. Like, if it helps you to get some writing done, that's the point, isn't it?
For me, I mean, I think every word is a victory. You know, every word that you've written in November that you wouldn't otherwise have written is a victory. And, you know, a lot of people don't make it to the 50K, but they'll still have maybe 10, 20 or 30K words that they didn't have at the start of November. And that's amazing. I mean, there are also, should give a mention to Camp NaNoWriMo, which is usually, I think, in June and August every year, or July, and it changes sometimes. I think it's June and August. And that's really for people for whom November is a bad month to be doing this. Same principle, but you can set your own word count. So there are other options out there, but November is all about the 50K and doing as many as you can. And within that, I mean, you were talking about flexibility. There is a degree of flexibility there. You're supposed to be writing a novel from scratch that you only started on day one, but who's to say that you could continue a project that you've already started, or write some non-fiction, or write short stories? You know, the whole idea is to get you writing, and whatever form that takes, you know, I'm not going to tell anyone. That's entirely up to you.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess for people who are completely unfamiliar with it, NaNoWriMo is National Novel Writing Month.
That's right.
And it was originally an American thing,
yes.
Hence national, but actually it's a global thing now, isn't it?
It is, yeah. All around the world there will be people writing novels in November. And that makes for a terrific community as well, because at any time of day or night there will be people online who are doing the same thing and potentially can help you out if you get stuck or need a bit of encouragement.
Yeah, and because that community aspect is something that can very easily be missing for writers, because you're in your study or your office or wherever on your own, writing into a keyboard or on paper, and it can feel quite solitary, whereas NaNoWriMo builds in this kind of community support all the way through.
I think, you know, it might be that there are people who can write very well all on their own without discussing anything and can get their heads down and work well on their own, and that's great, you know. But for me, I need people around me to write, and I think it increases the level of fun for me talking about the work in progress and hearing about other people's work as well, because we're all writing such incredibly different things. I always think it's lovely that you will get, you know, a sci-fi writer or a contemporary women's fiction writer or crime writer or literary fiction all in a room together, quite happily encouraging everybody else to get on with the words and get things done.
Yeah, particularly because when writers tend to get together at festivals or conventions, it tends to be quite genre specific, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Whereas, yeah, NaNoWriMo, you just get everyone piling together.
It is like that, yes. And also, you know, there's this whole element of competition that kind of is there and also isn't there at the same time, because, you know, you might be competing in terms of word count with other writers, if that helps you. But also the only person you're really competing against is yourself. And for those people who write at tremendous speed, you know, we do have writers that do 200,000 words in a month and more. And they are just as pressured on themselves as they are for the writers who might manage 10,000 or 20,000. It's just everybody is doing it differently, and that's a great thing.
Yeah. So am I right in thinking that after that initial NaNoWriMo, you then did a creative writing weekend course?
I think it probably was around that time. I mean, it was. I've done courses, you know, adult education type courses and weekend courses for fun, that sort of thing, for a long, long time. But yes, in my case, I think the one that worked the best for me was a weekend course I did at Westdene College in Chichester. Yeah, definitely worth it.
Yeah, because I think the key thing with what happened after that first NaNoWriMo is that your writing career suddenly blossomed out of that.
Yeah, it took a little while, actually. I mean, the first year I did NaNoWriMo was 2005, and then I did it again in 2006, 2007. All those 3 years without any idea of publication. That was something that just didn't occur to me because, you know, publication is something that happens to other people, isn't it? Not to people like me. And additionally, you know, those first 3 years, I never managed to actually finish a project. I sort of got to the end of November and hung up my keyboard, so to speak, and got on with Christmas shopping and everything else and left it. And it was only 2008 when I had a novel that had a beginning, middle and an end. And that was the first time I thought I could do something with this, you know? It doesn't, it's the editing process is that bit harder than you think it's going to be, but that was my first time I'd had something that was actually finished.
Yeah, and then from that moment when you thought, oh, this might be something special, something worth developing, what was the route from there to then having a publisher?
It was a slightly weird one. I mean, you know, as we all come to writing from a different place, we all come to publication from a slightly different place, really, as well. And as I said, I'd been on this amazing creative writing course at Westdene, and the tutor was Greg Moss, who is a fabulous writer and editor. And I sent the manuscript to him because I got stuck editing, basically. I'd edited the first third of it over and over and over again and didn't know what I was doing. So I sent it to Greg and just said, look, do you think I need to stop doing this and work on something else? And he actually sent it to Myriad Editions for a second opinion, so he said. And Myriad Editions went on to be my publisher of my first three novels and my sixth and seventh. Lost track now, but yeah. So that's how I kind of got into it. I kind of snuck in through the back door.
Yes. And those first three books, do they all have NaNoWriMo roots?
Yeah, in fact, the first six of my books were all written in November. It was something that I think I trusted the process. I knew that I was going to have the encouragement I needed in November to be able to get me finished. And also I wanted to show everybody that this is a great way to write, you know. So I did carry on writing in November. I still do. I still participate every November and will continue to do so because it's you know, not only for me in terms of publication, but just in terms of getting those words down. It's the best way, I think.
Yeah, because I think it would be an easy assumption to make that NaNoWriMo's like a stepping stone to, you know, becoming a writer, and that particularly, you know, in your case, once you got published and you'd had that success, that NaNoWriMo might at that point not be relevant anymore. But for you, it seems very much it's kind of part of the process rather than...
Oh, definitely, definitely. I think it's... NaNoWriMo is not geared around publication. I think it needs to be said that actually what this is about is getting a novel done and finished and written. And what you do with it after that is entirely up to you. It might be that further down the line when you've edited it and worked on it, that it might be something you can send off for publication. And, you know, it's happened to me and it's happened to an awful lot of other novelists as well. I mean, there are some very famous novels that have been, that have started life in November. Julia Crouch's first novel, Cuckoo, was written in November. Erin Morgenstern's The Night Circus, that went on to be a terrific movie, that was also a NaNo novel. So it's not just me, and you know, if it happened to me, it can happen to anyone else. But it should be said that what you have to do is write the novel first.
Yes, it's not like you get to the end of November and it's like, right, I'm going to send this off to editors and agents and publishers.
No. I think, you know, you tend to see some criticism of NaNoWriMo sometimes in the press, and that always makes the assumption that people write novels and send them off to publishers immediately. They've finished the writing, the words, the end. And that just isn't the way it's done. You know, you want to be able to send them your best work to have the best chance of publication. So the editing process is something that happens in that space. But in order to do that, you know, you have to have the novel to start with.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, the biggest barrier to being published is not writing any words.
Exactly.
In the first place. So you, I think it was 6 books you said you wrote that had a kind of NaNoWriMo starting point.
Yes.
Since then, and obviously The Murder of Harriet Monckton that's just come out, have you written that in a different way?
I did actually start writing it in November a couple of years ago, but I very quickly realised I hadn't done nearly enough research. This was a book that, because it was my first historical novel, it's set in Victorian Bromley in Kent, I was holding myself up at every stage of the process by not knowing simple things about the geography or the lifestyle and things like that. So I put Harriet to one side to write it at a different time, and I just picked up the story that I had in the back of my mind and ran with that. So actually, through doing the last few Novembers, I've ended up with 5 unfinished, just fun novels, kind of sitting there on the back burner. But Harriet was kind of a really different process that needed a lot longer. It took me, I think, 5 months to write it.
Yeah, because I think since you were initially published, you've had a book out almost every year.
Pretty much, yeah.
And I guess the NaNoWriMo process is helpful in to keep that kind of workload going.
It definitely is, yes. I mean, if it hadn't been for NaNoWriMo, not only would I have not written a novel at all, but I certainly wouldn't have written 6 novels in November, and I probably wouldn't have ever written Harriet either, because I wouldn't have had the confidence to do so. Does that
yes.
make sense?
Yes, absolutely. So, how did you discover the Harriet Monckton story, and what drew you to that?
Funnily enough, it was a different November story. I was working on a governess Victorian novel set in North Norfolk. And I thought, in advance of that, I thought I'd need to do a bit of research. So in particular, I needed to research Victorian coroner's inquests. So I took myself off to the National Archives, which is a great place for novelists. I can highly recommend it. Spending a day in there was losing yourself in stories, basically. And I found this unsolved murder that nobody else had written about. It's not appeared, as far as I'm aware, in any compendiums of Victorian crime, and yet it's the most fascinating case about this horrific murder of a young woman. And her, you know, her murder was never solved. There was never anyone arrested or tried for her murder. And I wanted to find out who did it. So in order to investigate the murder, I had to write about it.
So that presumably involved a completely different approach in terms of research and figuring out your own take on the murder and what happened before you even started writing?
Yeah, it did really, because I wanted to base it on fact. And in order to do that, I had to research where the edges of the fact were, if that makes sense. So I did a lot of research on the British newspaper archive and found everything I could possibly find about this case, about Bromley at the time, about the 1840s in general. So it was a lot of historical research, and it also involved planning. Now, this is something I'm not used to doing. And going back to NaNoWriMo briefly, I think you're either a planner or a pantser. And there will be people who plan their November novels really carefully and write down character studies and chapter breakdowns and things like that. So on the 1st of November, they know exactly where they're going to go and how they're going to get there. And that's great if you can do that. I'm immensely jealous, because I've never been able to do that at all. I always start on the 1st of November with only the vaguest notions of where my story's going. And Harriet wasn't that sort of book, so really Harriet wasn't suited to November. But that's not to say I haven't already got 3 or 4 different plots lurking for this November.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I find when I'm writing that quite often the best ideas crop up halfway through the writing as you get to know your story and you get to know the characters. When you're writing something that is based on fact and reality and something that happened, how do you kind of combine those two things? Did you ever feel like you were kind of hemmed in by what really happened?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I totally agree with you. I love the freedom of writing a story, and then there's that delicious moment where the characters kind of take over and take things in an unexpected direction. And while that wasn't really the case for Harriet, because I was quite restricted by the fact, actually, there was a great deal of freedom in there, because the way that the inquest documents were, and because there was no resolution to Harriet's case, there was no justice for her, I was open to choose any one of a number of people who could have killed her. So I have freedom in terms of that, in terms of building the red herrings and hiding the murderer in plain sight and all of those things that I do in a traditional crime story, the other ones I've done, all just slotting it into the spaces between the facts that I had to get in.
Yeah, and I guess history as well. You know, supposedly it's, you know, factual, but there's always a storytelling element
there is,
to how
there?
We actually interact with that.
Yes, history is written by the victors, so they say, or whatever the saying goes. But I found that as well, because Harriet is a story as much about the position of women in society in the 1840s, I think, as the murder itself. And the restrictions that were placed upon women and the freedoms, relatively speaking, that men had while still being confined by the conventions of the day. So there were a whole different set of limitations, really, to what we would find in a modern crime story like the ones I've written. But that in itself allows for some astonishing little twists and turns when you get into it.
Yeah, and when you're dealing with real people who existed, what kind of responsibility do you feel, especially towards Harriet, I suppose, but then also towards the other characters, some of whom are going to become, you know, the accused?
Yes, I know. I think I'm quite fortunate that it was so long ago, really, because I do feel that whoever I have chosen as the murderer probably, maybe, didn't do it. It's quite likely that it was someone else entirely. And yet these are real people. These are people that lived and breathed. And what I've tried to do, really, is give them a voice, particularly Harriet, who was unheard and forgotten about. And in doing that, yes, I've had to sacrifice someone else to to take the blame. But it's on the understanding that that part is made up, you know. The story goes to the moment when the inquest declared a verdict, and everything after that is made up. So I think the reader hopefully will be able to work their way through the list of suspects as I did and make their own minds up as well.
Yes. Did you ever consider not having the perpetrator, you know, kind of leaving it ambiguous? Or did you always want to have specify someone?
I did consider it. I've considered doing this in so many different ways. I considered doing a true crime narrative, or a true crime with a bit of embellishment in it, and then leaving it open as to who the murderer was. But, you know, I find those sorts of books a little bit unsatisfying somehow. And I wanted there to be some sort of justice for Harriet, even if it was only fictional justice. And the ultimate thing I wanted to do was for Harriet to be remembered and be spoken of today, and for everybody to know that she suffered this terrible thing, and yet she existed and she was a real person.
Mm. Can you see yourself kind of sourcing story ideas that way again from historical reality, or do you feel that you'll go back to entirely fictional stuff?
I already have actually sourced a kind of semi-linked story from Harriet, because what I wanted to do with all of these suspects that were there for Harriet's murder, I wanted to investigate them all a little bit further, because if, say, 10 years down the line, one of them had been arrested for a different murder, then it would obviously make it more likely that that person was responsible for Harriet as well. So in the course of that investigation, I found another story linked to one of the people in the book, which is entirely unrelated to Harriet, and is nefarious, shall we say, and intriguing. So I'm working my way through that at the moment, but I don't know if that will be a book or whether I will just write something really fun for November and work on that as my next book. It's yes. amazing knowing that I've got all these options, really.
Yep.
Too many stories.
Yes, that's a nice problem to have,
isn't it? It is.
Yeah, it sounds like anyone who's maybe, you know, suffering from writer's block or can't come up with an idea, they should just get to the archive and have a rummage.
Definitely. I mean, there's archives all over the country that you can freely go and visit. You know, you just need to get a reader's ticket for free and go and have a rummage through and see what you can find. But, you know, there's story ideas everywhere, all over the place, and not even just even on the NaNoWriMo website. There are forums galore for people to go and help themselves to, usually plot ideas that people have got spare, just left lying around for other people to take up, starting sentences, starting characters, all of that sort of thing. So if you're stuck for a story, there are certainly plenty of places to go to.
Yes, so with NaNoWriMo around the corner, coming up very quickly, are you going to be doing it this year?
I am going to be doing it this year, and I'm also one of four municipal liaisons for the Norfolk region. Every region in the country has their own regional forum and MLs, municipal liaisons, who are there to kind of encourage you and help you across that 50,000 word line. So in every region around the country and the world, there will be local write-ins organised where you can get together with fellow novelists and drink coffee or tea and sit with your laptop or your notebook and write and get as many words down as you can. So all of these things are being put in place now, ready for November. And that's part of what makes NaNoWriMo so fabulous.
Yeah, because that's something that's important, actually, because for anyone that maybe doesn't feel comfortable with the kind of online aspects of it, like NaNoWriMo is very much something that happens, you know, physically in your local area as well.
Yes, it is, yeah. And, you know, there are people who do write a novel in November who never go near the website. I mean, that makes it much harder as far as I'm concerned, but, you know, that's an equally valid way to do it. But I think it's much more fun with other people, personally.
Also, you're a really excellent example of why people should try NaNoWriMo, because your particular subsequent path has been so exciting.
Yeah.
But in terms of people who are maybe thinking of trying it for the first time this November, do you have any particular tips or advice or things not to do?
Oh, my goodness me. I'm kind of quite envious of anyone doing it for the first time, because it feels like there's a whole world of excitement out there waiting to be discovered for you. I think if you've ever said to yourself, I'd like to write a novel one day, but you never have, then this is your chance to do it. I don't think there's anything I would say to discourage you from doing that other than don't stop.
Yes, just keep going.
Just keep going. If you get stuck, swap over onto a different scene, or if you run out of story, you know, if you run out of plot, swap to a different plot, but just keep going.
Yes.
It's only for 30 days. You can tell people that you're doing it, tell all your friends and family that you're writing a novel, and get encouragement from wherever you can. It's only 1,667 words a day, which is infinitely doable. And the other tip I would say is don't let yourself get behind early on. If you can try and get a few extra thousand words in those early days, that will see you through the days later in the month where something might crop up and you might have a day where you can't write because you're too busy. So get ahead, because it's much easier to stay that bit ahead rather than try and catch up.
Yes, when life inevitably gets in the way.
It does, yes.
Yes, excellent. Well, thank you very much, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
And good luck to everyone who is going to be doing NaNoWriMo this year.
Yes, I'm looking forward to seeing all those beautiful novels being born.
Thanks for listening. If you're taking part in NaNoWriMo this year, good luck. Please do send us tweets throughout the month at Writers' Centre to let us know your word count and how you're getting on. This November at Dragon Hall, we've got an exciting lineup of events. On Saturday the 10th, you can get ready for 2019 with a workshop called Who Are We Now? Life Writing in a Post-Brexit World with Katie Massey. That same evening, there's then a performance of Lamanby, a live literature event by award-winning poet Jacob Polley. Later in the month, we have the return of two free events, with the monthly Dragon Hall Salon, which was superb last time and really packed full of fantastically varied writers,
and UEA Live, featuring London-based debut novelist Patrick Langley. Don't forget to subscribe, rate and review the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher or wherever else you listen to it, as it really does help other people discover the show. As always, to be the first to know about all of our upcoming events and writer opportunities, come find us on Twitter and Instagram at Writers Centre, follow us on Facebook and subscribe to our newsletter over on the website at nationalcentreforwriting.org.uk.